Hello and welcome to the Answers for Cancers podcast. I am your host, Anne-Marie Fay.
And I'm Michelle Matthews.
Together with some of Ireland's leading experts, we want to unravel what it truly means to have cancer.
From consultant diagnosis to treatment plans, from managing your symptoms to supports available, we have it covered. So whether you're a nurse working in oncology or have been personally affected by cancer, this podcast is for you. The Answers for Cancers podcast is sponsored by Care Plus Pharmacy. Care Plus Pharmacy is Ireland's leading community pharmacy brand, offering expert advice and services for a healthier and happier you. Find your nearest Care Plus on www.careplus.ie or follow them on social media for health and wellness inspiration and tips.
So today on the podcast, we actually have a really exciting episode. This is our first ever patient episode, and we are joined by the lovely Leanne. So Leanne is going to speak to us today about her journey when she was diagnosed with hormone positive breast cancer and her surrogacy journey, which ended up taking her all the way over to Canada. Her story is really inspiring as she advocated for herself and just spoke up for what she wanted. And she just makes it very clear that there's always options available, and it's really important to discuss what's important to you and make sure that you have these hard conversations with your consultant at the beginning. And I think she makes a really good point in it. It's much easier to have these hard conversations at the beginning than it is halfway through or towards the end. And I hope people get as much out of this as I did.
Yeah, absolutely. I think everybody will agree that she's really, really inspiring, and but also practical at the same time. She's was able to break it down and talk us through the journey and what she went through, and talk about how she came to make her decision to go down the surrogacy route. And she just provides some really practical tips and resources that she used to help her through the journey. And if hopefully you find them helpful, if this is something that you're considering for yourself. We do mention the podcast that Leanne is quite open to answer any questions that anybody may have, or if they need some advice on where to go and to seek some more information. And equally, you can also DM us on Instagram at the Answers for Cancers podcast, or alternatively email us on the Answers for Cancers podcast at gmail.com.
So Leanne, thank you so much for coming to the podcast today. I really appreciate it and taking the time to tell us about your surrogacy journey. So thank you. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah,
don't we?
I've actually been dying for this conversation. It's just something that it's definitely not talked about enough. And we just, I suppose, from connecting with patients on a daily basis, we just think that it's going to benefit people so much. So I just want to thank you from the bottom of our heart for coming to tell your story, because I think so many people will benefit from it. So thank you.
No, yeah. Thank you. I'm glad to be here and, you know, share my story, and hopefully it will help one or two people out there, you know. And if it helps anybody, then that's a plus.
Absolutely. We might actually just go back to the start, if that's okay. We might just maybe go back to the cancer diagnosis, if you don't mind, maybe just starting from there.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about your story and how it started.
Yeah, so my cancer story is quite convoluted, because I have the BRCA gene, so that's a breast cancer gene. So I have BRCA2, which gives me a high propensity towards breast and ovarian cancer. And it's quite complicated, because 10 years prior to my actual cancer diagnosis, I found out I had the gene, and I went for I went for pre-testing. So I went for what's the name of that? Mammogram. Oh, yes. Sorry. Haven't needed one in a while. So I had a mammogram.
And did you find out you had the gene from somebody in your family, find out they had the gene, or?
So my mother and one of my sisters also had breast cancer. And so we found out when my sister was diagnosed, we went for the testing. And so found out that I also carried the gene, and I was in Australia at the time. So they suggested that I do almost like pre-clearance test to sort of set a baseline, so then they could understand whether there'd been any changes in my breasts subsequently. Mm-hmm. But to my surprise, I found out that I had early stage breast cancer. So it was ductal carcinoma in situ. So effectively, I had precancerous cells. Mm-hmm. But given my history and the family history, they decided that they wanted me to have a mastectomy at that time. So I was 28 when I had my mastectomy. Yeah. And 6 months later, I had reconstructive surgery, and it was almost as if I forgot about that happened, and I relocated back to Ireland later that year. Mm-hmm. Then 6 years later, when I was 35 and trying for a second baby, I just had two miscarriages, and the night before the second miscarriage, I felt a lump in my breast and I knew right then that I had cancer, because I shouldn't have had any, there shouldn't have been the ability to have any bumps or lumps. So I focused on the next day I had a miscarriage and ended up in hospital for 5 days with that. So that was the priority at that time. And then once I sort of got my head around that and my body had recovered, I went to the doctor about the lump, and she got me, a week later I was in front of a doctor. Mm. Got they kept reassuring me, saying, oh, you know, it should be okay, it's probably just linked to the miscarriage, but we will do we'll do checkups just in case. So I went in this, I walked into the, it was actually the Mater Public, and 2 hours later I walked out and they'd sent the biopsy off. And the day before Christmas Eve 4 years ago, I found out that I had breast cancer.
Wow. And when you were near Australia, did you have a double mastectomy? Or
I did.
Was it you did?
Yeah. Yeah. Double okay. mastectomy. Yeah.
Yeah. So a complete surprise.
Yes.
Mm, absolutely. And were you
thought
getting...
It was a big decision at the time to have the mastectomy, and a lot of people thought I was crazy to do it. But it definitely saved my life, because my cancer was so fast growing at, you know, I probably wouldn't be here now had I not had that mastectomy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then at that stage, then did you continue on then for further treatment then when you were diagnosed with the breast cancer for the second time?
Yes. So they decided that, well, I asked who was the best oncologist to deal with me and my genetic situation.
Yeah.
And so that took me to Professor Gallagher, who's a specific genetics oncologist. Mm-hmm. And I went to see him, and I did things like the oncotype test.
Yeah.
So I'd been encouraged to have the oncotype test. But I went in to meet him for the first time saying, you have to give me chemotherapy, because mm-hmm. I do not want to be sitting here and potentially having a third brush with cancer. Mm-hmm. So question one that I had for him was, you're going to give me chemotherapy, right? And then the second question was, and also I want to have a second baby. So
that was the ultimatum.
And mm. I had done a lot of research and was going, oh, I want to have Solidex to shut down my ovaries, and I want to do pre-fertility fertilization. And so I went in armed, like, you know, in my job, like, I would do a lot of research if I need to. And I went in, I did a lot of research, and because I'd had cancer in the family, I knew what the potential implications would be. Mm-hmm. So that was the thing. So I went in and, you know, was really challenging, and probably wasn't a very pleasant patient at the beginning, because I knew what I wanted to get out of it. And I basically said, you're not coming near me. No, nobody's putting any chemotherapy into me until I have at least have had that chance to do fertility preservation. Unfortunately, I know a couple of people who, you know, not actually Ireland based, I probably should say that, who didn't have that opportunity and are, you know, sterile as a result. And, you know, it's very difficult, but, you know, a lot of people don't want to be thinking about fertility. But for me, possibly coming off the back of that miscarriage, mm-hmm. it was front and center in my mind. It certainly wasn't something my husband was at all interested in. He was like, no, you just need to start treatment now. And I was going, no, I want to have the life after cancer that I had planned.
Absolutely.
And so that was hugely important
to yeah me. I think that's the silver lining with your story, that you had that bit of education from the, I suppose, your family history and doing the bit of research yourself, that you were, I suppose, you knew exactly what to expect and what you wanted in the future. Whereas sometimes when you're hit with a cancer diagnosis, you're so in shock that you don't actually have the ability to think of the future. And I think that's why it's so important for your story to come on. So to encourage people to think of their future, because yeah. we're sitting here with you now and you're so well, and yeah. you have had such a lovely story and a successful story that it's yeah, it's just so great to hear how you navigate it, because there you do have a choice. Patients do have a choice in what they want to do, and your future is really, really important. That cancer isn't the end at all. We have really successful stories. So yeah, thank you yeah. again for coming on to share. So I suppose no from there, at that point, where did the fertility go after that with Dr. Yeah. Gallagher?
So Professor Gallagher referred me to the Rotunda, and I did my fertility preservation there. And effectively, they almost put you in a priority queue where they work backwards from when your first chemotherapy session needs to happen, and then they calculate when they would need to do your egg retrieval, and they just work backwards in terms of trying to figure out where you are in your cycle. So and then my husband obviously had to go in as well, and we were very lucky that it was successful for us, and we ended up with a number of embryos. It's a very difficult situation because you're getting injected with a lot of fertility drugs, and they're almost escalated compared to a normal person's because you only have a very short window of time. So you know,
I'm sorry, this happens just before the chemotherapy
starts. And so effectively I went in for my egg and egg retrieval, which became the embryos. I think that happened on the Thursday or Friday, and I started chemotherapy the following Tuesday.
Wow.
So it was very, very tight. I think there was 11 days of a cycle that they had. So you know, the Rotunda unit are very, very good at prioritizing the cancer patients to enable that to happen.
And you know, is there a lot of work involved in like those days before? So like injection wise and stuff, is there, what exactly is the process? Is it?
Yeah. So I went in and they had sort of examined you and sort of looked at your egg follicles, I think it was called. And then, you know, you get referred back out to the chemist so that you have to get drugs that you have to inject yourself with on a daily basis. And then every sort of 2 or 3 days I was back in the Rotunda unit to be monitored, and they would figure out whether they needed to adjust your medication. And then you went in for like a procedure where they took it all out and then fertilized the eggs with the sperm.
Wow. Okay. It's a lot, isn't it, to take in all at once just before you're about to start chemo as well.
I found that was what I wanted to focus on though.
Yeah.
That definitely was for me. And the whole way through all of the treatment that I had, I kept thinking about those embryos in a drawer. That was my hope.
It gave you motivation nearly.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I remember the first time I spoke to you when you were telling me about it upstairs and I was chatting to you, I could see your face, like you were just lit up when you were speaking about it and when you were showing me the picture of your son, and I could just see what an incredible experience it had been for you. So yeah, it's really great that people know this option is available.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And then I suppose from there, then I suppose the embryos then were developed, and I suppose they are just put to one side then for that time, and then you powered on through your chemotherapy at that stage.
That was it. Yeah. Yeah. So they were then put aside, and the Rotunda will keep them in storage for however long you need them as well. You know, whereas other places you might have to pay to keep them in storage, etc. They were like, no, they're there for however you need them. And they actually also offered counseling if you needed it as well. And then I went back and did my treatment, and I had 4 combination chemotherapies, 12 Taxols, and then I had 37 rounds of radiotherapy, and even now I'm still on hormone therapy. But I'd kind of, you know, during my 6 monthly reviews and all of the meetings that I would have had with my oncologist, I kept every time coming back to, when can I have a baby? When can I have a baby? And, you know, at one point we were talking about that after doing my 18 months of, because my cancer was hormonal, because of after 18 months, he had initially thought, oh, maybe I'd be comfortable with you coming off the hormone therapy, because you can't be pregnant and be on hormone therapy at the same time. And we had a really difficult conversation where he just said to me, look, I don't think I'm ever going to be comfortable with you being pregnant again, because with my family history and with me myself developing cancer again after being pregnant, you know, and, you know, getting closer and closer and closer to 40. He's just like, look, I just don't know if it's something. And, you know, Professor Gallagher didn't know about surrogacy, you know, so I effectively was just, you know, trying to figure things out. And, you know, I have to say, you know, I'm not a big Kardashian fan, but like the Kardashians have sort of opened that up as letting people like talk, see that as an option as well and a talking point. And so I really just started looking into it. And that was around, I think it was around the early March 2018. And by chance, an agency was running an event in Crow Park. So they were called Families Through Surrogacy. They're now called Growing Families. And I was able to get a ticket to go to that event. And I basically was like to my husband, you're coming, we're going to go and check this out. And we went there and we had so many questions. And my husband initially thought, this is crazy. This is like people like the Kardashians do. People like us don't do this. Yeah. And we went and we had some, like, we got a lot of answers to a lot of questions, And I suppose from then that was really the start of our surrogacy journey.
And was surrogacy your always your first choice after natural kind of conception?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if you're aware, but if you've had cancer, it's really difficult to get on to adoption as well.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah, and maybe that's changed, but that was certainly my understanding at the time. Okay. Was that the fact that you had, you know, and I was still technically in treatment, and I think you needed to be 5 years clear. So, okay, you know, to put things in context, I walked in here for my first chemotherapy almost 4 years ago. So it was 5th of March, 2017 when I first came in here, and I have an 18-month-old son now. So I definitely didn't want to wait. I have a 5-year-old, and I was very mindful of a gap.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong, I would have still been trying if it hadn't been successful, but I was very concerned about her growing up as an only child and then bringing in almost a 5 or 6 year gap as well, and where I wanted to be at my stage.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And then I suppose you went to the convention, and I like you said, the oncology team here, like, there's, it's not something that we specialize in, and we didn't have a huge amount of information on the surrogacy. So how did you do most of your research on it?
So at that event, I was able to talk to effectively the way they had it set up was by country. So surrogacy is only, you know, possible in a couple of countries. So largely, and I think a couple more countries have opened up, but the Ukraine and America and Canada were the three big countries when I was looking into this about 5 years ago. And we really tried to get a feel for what country would have worked right for us, and that kind of depended on what the options were. So we then, when we agreed that we were going to try and look into it, we tried to figure out, well, how do we make this pregnancy as normal and close to the pregnancy that I'd had with my daughter as we could have? And so a big thing for us was being able to talk to the surrogate in English, right? So so we quickly ruled out any non-English speaking country, and also any situation where you wouldn't be able to have that day-to-day interaction. So we wanted to have a close relationship with our surrogate and be able to talk to her and understand how the pregnancy was going, and also have that bond before and after pregnancy as well. And also, we didn't know if it would be successful. So, you know, you're taking a leap on somebody as well. So, you know, we wanted to be able to have that, like, just be really open and frank. So that's how we ended up in Canada. Canada has a type of surrogacy called altruism. So it's altruistic surrogacy. The surrogate doesn't actually make a huge amount of money out of it. It's they're doing it basically because they want to, and they get reimbursed for expenses. Now, it wasn't actually a cheaper option the way I saw, you know, it wasn't. I suppose that's a big differential between the US and Canada. Like, it's kind of the same model, except the surrogate just gets almost reimbursed for living expenses, whereas in America they get paid. But it was still expensive from our perspective, but it was cheaper than America, while still enabling you to converse in English.
Actually, thanks, really, really important point, and a really good point to make for people to consider what they want out of their surrogacy. So like you said, you want to have contact, you want to be able to speak in English, whereas possibly some people, they don't want to know that much, you know what I mean? I don't know really how it works, but I think that's a really good thing for people to consider when they're deciding where to go, what they really want from it.
And I suppose it is very individual. Some people, I think, might like it to be very business-like, so they keeps the emotions out of it. So it's just kind of, I suppose, really individual, isn't it?
That's it. And the other big thing for us was around ensuring so surrogacy can get, it's like a whole new legal situation. So one of the big things that was important to us was being able to make sure that I was on the birth certificate as the mother. So for instance, in Ireland, there's basically the rule that they say it's a Latin phrase, which means of the mother they are always certain, meaning that whoever gives birth to the child is the person that's on the birth certificate, and that's it. In Canada, they, depending on which state you go to, you're either immediately, the genetic parent is either immediately recognized, or in the state that we went to, which was Manitoba, the birth certificate was reissued after a DNA test, and I am on my son's birth certificate. And as I understand it, in other countries, well, certainly when we were looking at it in the Ukraine, that wouldn't have been the case. So I very much wanted to have the legal rights over my son from the beginning as well. So that was hugely important to us. Now, other people might not have that option if they don't have their own embryo, because a lot of people for surrogacy will potentially need an egg or sperm donor as well.
So there's two different types, isn't there, surrogacy? There's the traditional, where the surrogate is actually the mother, it's their egg that's used in the pregnancy, isn't it? And then the gestational is
we had to transfer our embryos to Canada, which also was very difficult and involved a lot of research.
Absolutely. We'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. I just want to take a moment to talk to you about hay fever, something that I have suffered with for many years now. Are you concerned about the overlap of symptoms between hay fever and COVID-19? Did you know that you can contact your local CarePlus pharmacist over the phone for advice on how to distinguish between the two and for recommendations on the best over-the-counter treatments for your allergies? You can also check out our helpful guide on CarePlus website, which is careplus.ie, that shows which symptoms come under which condition. Now back to our conversation. And you mentioned that there's a whole legal side to the surrogacy. How did you navigate this? Did you have a lawyer straight off the bat from the very beginning, or?
So at the convention that we went to, there were lawyers there. We actually, the agency, we were able to talk to them and get some advice, and then talk to other, like through that agency, there's almost like a support network in Ireland, and we were able to talk to other people who'd done this and sort of say, okay, can you point us in the right direction? Ironically, my husband and I are both from Northern Ireland, and so we were able to utilise the Northern Ireland system, which actually was more preferential for the genetic parents. So we actually got a Northern Ireland based lawyer, which was significantly more like cheaper than using the Irish lawyer.
Interesting. Yeah. And you were saying that they had to send the embryos over to Canada. So they obviously went before you, did they?
Yes. Yeah. So we had basically Googled, we done two things. We Googled couriers for human DNA, but one of the things that we had to do was go back and speak to the Rotunda and say, this is something that we're looking to do. What are your thoughts on it? You know, is it possible? And once we had selected an agency in Canada, and I can come back to that, but what we had done was we actually got both like fertility centres to give us their list of approved couriers. Okay. And there was only one name on both lists. Brilliant. So that was the courier that we decided to use, because we knew that you didn't have to go through a pre-approval process for them, and that was a very nerve-wracking day in terms of getting them transported. But what we did was we were lucky enough that we were able to retain a couple of embryos in Dublin and send the rest to Canada, because it literally was that case of not putting all our eggs in one basket.
Absolutely.
We really didn't want to do that.
And how do you actually get through the nerves of something like that on the day? Like, you seem so like focused and level headed from the very beginning. Are you just like that naturally, or?
I don't know. If everybody would agree that I was very, very focused on what this could mean for me and my family. And I very much, like, I would have, to be honest, I hoped that I would have been okay if it didn't happen, right? But I knew that I wouldn't have been okay if I hadn't tried.
Yeah.
And so for me, this was all part of the trying to do this. And it was difficult. It was difficult financially. It was very stressful. You know, there was a huge amount of work that was involved. We kept it, you know, apart from our immediate families, we kept it very, very quiet right up until the baby, like, we were 6 months pregnant. You know, we didn't tell, we hardly told anybody. You know, we made it because, you know, it was almost our whole family's journey as well, you know, and everybody knew that we'd had the miscarriages, that had been through the cancer, that we'd tried to do it, you know. So, you know, we tried to just make lists. I made lots of lists. You know,
focus on what you can do.
Yes, absolutely, that's it.
And this might be a too personal question, but you showed us a picture of your gorgeous daughter Matilda earlier on as well. Did she understand everything that was going on? Did you explain to her?
She thought she was having a sister, though. So, so that was fun when a little boy arrived, and she was going, where's my brother? she, I think, you know, she remembers very fondly the summer, the six weeks that she had in Canada. And she can't really understand why we can't get on planes again, you know. So, so I think she does say sometimes, oh, well, I was extra special because I was in your tummy. And I say, well, he's extra special because he wasn't.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's the challenge.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I suppose, like you mentioned there about the surrogacy agency, how did you come about connecting with them?
Again, through the
convention.
Through the convention. So you're basically able to go around, and you know, we had discussions with a number of people, and you know, there's a lot of people there at those events that are really out there to try and help people and give guidance and support. So we had spoke to a couple of people then that had went to Canada, mm-hmm. and then we very quickly settled on, okay, well, this is the agency that sort of felt like it was the right fit for us. So mm-hmm. you almost have like telephone interviews with the agency afterwards and go through your questions and, mm-hmm. you know, try and get a feel for, you know, what are you looking for and what are they looking for? And then after that, it's almost like a dating site where you submit your profile and the surrogate submits their profile. Mm-hmm. And then the way that our agency worked was if the surrogate liked your profile, that you were able to see their profile. So it was almost, it was surrogate led. Mm-hmm. And after that, you went through a 4 week like period where you could talk and decide whether you wanted to move forward together.
Yeah.
And do you meet personally or is it over the phone? Or?
So you have like a facilitated interview, like on Zoom or okay. whatever, which yeah. back then didn't
yeah,
seem
it was
as
real
normal.
Anomaly back then. Yeah, yeah.
Now it's everyday life. And then after that, when we agreed that we both wanted to move forward, we set up like a WhatsApp group, and our surrogate's husband and me and my husband were in that, and I would have talked to her, you know, at least once a week. We would have had a scheduled telephone call. And then as we got through the, as you know, we were very lucky. She actually got pregnant at her first attempt, which was really, really, really great. And so then once a month, as she was starting to get bigger, me and our daughter would have been on the call with her, and she had two kids herself. And so there would have been like chatting, I suppose, family to family.
Mm-hmm. Oh, lovely.
So were you in Canada at this stage or for the whole pregnancy?
No.
So
we only went to Canada 2 weeks before the birth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And how did you find being away from, I suppose, being here and her being over in Canada?
Yeah, it was very, very difficult. But, you know, then it was just about trying to have close communication, and she sent lots of photographs. There was a shared pregnancy app that we both joined, and so she sort of said to me, okay, well, let's both join this app. So we did that, and so then we could see the various stages. She included me in all, like, you know, any appointments. She would have had the phone, her mom would have been holding the phone, and you know, just a lot of communication the whole way through. Us being the way that we are, of course, we did hit a bit of a roadblock where at the 20-week scan, they identified that there was an issue with the placenta. Mm-hmm. And so then we went from, we'd just told everybody at, you know, the 18 weeks that, okay, you know, we're having a baby. And then it was very complicated where they thought there was an issue with the placenta. Can't remember the medical phrase for what it was, but she effectively then needed to be scanned every 2 weeks right up until birth. But it ended up he was fine, and he was actually born on his due date. So,
oh wow,
yeah,
that's really rare.
It's really odd. Yeah.
And were you there for the birth?
Yes, so I went over 2 weeks beforehand with my daughter, and my husband followed us a week later, and I was there for the birth. And my husband and my daughter, they were allowed into the room sort of like an hour afterwards.
Brilliant. Yeah. And how long did you stay in Canada then after that?
6 weeks.
6 weeks.
So that was partly because we obviously were concerned about bringing a newborn baby home. So we flew home when he was 4 weeks old the day we flew home. But also to allow for the legal process. So effectively what happened was that whilst we were still in hospital, so when he was a day old, they came and did the DNA test and confirmed, I suppose, that got sent off. And once we got the results, that confirmed that we were his genetic parents, and that got then sent to a judge. So we had a Canadian-based lawyer who was compiling and filing those documents for us. And then we were able to, I think 3 days before we were due to fly home, we got that back, got him an emergency passport, and we were able to fly home. And we have the birth certificate saying that we're his parents, so you know, we were able to get back into Ireland no problem.
It's such a gorgeous story. Yeah, say that day coming home was just amazing.
Yeah, we were
very surreal to leave out the country and then come back with a newborn baby.
Yeah, packing to go over was very odd, you know, in terms of, you know, everyone sort of said, would you not just find out if it's a girl or a boy? And we were like, no, because that was again back to that point about wanting the pregnancy to be as similar as as to the pregnancy that I the successful pregnancy that I did have. So you know, it was very difficult.
And then now, like, would you still have links to the surrogate mother?
Yeah,
you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, lovely. So we still are in touch with her, and you know, my daughter was,
and that's by choice. Like,
that's by choice. Yeah, that's by choice. That was entirely our choice. Like, you know, the way that I, like, she's part of my family, she changed my life for the better, you know, and she did it for nothing, effectively, you know. And you know, so we're, like, she's just a very good friend, she's a very good family friend, and you know, someday, pandemic being over, you know, we'd love to go back to Canada and see them again. And you know,
It's lovely.
I mean, that's a personal decision for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I suppose you can be as
connected or disconnected as you want. Yeah.
And I suppose you were saying about, like, when you get to choose, I suppose the criteria of what you want in a link with a surrogate mother, I suppose you can be as specific as you want to be, can you? Yeah.
Yeah. And I think in some of the, like, more Eastern European countries, I think you don't have any choice. I think you just, you know, it's just who you get. But it's, you know, there's no, I suppose, ongoing relationship.
Yeah.
But that wasn't what I wanted. That might be what other people want. But it was very much about what worked for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I suppose thinking of patients that may be in a similar position to you now, what would be the main things that you would want them to know, or what are the main things you would want to say about surrogacy or to be aware of, that you think would have helped you, I suppose, if you hadn't known beforehand?
I remember scouring the internet for situations of people who were in my position and trying to hear that successful story, you know, and sort of go, okay, it could be me. And, you know, I was definitely the person where everybody else around me just seemed to be having babies, and I was the one who at 35 was going into the you know, the cancer ward, you know. And, you know, so for me it was about having that voice to ask those questions. Doing the fertility preservation gave me options, you know. And and I know I had some difficult conversations with my oncologist and with my husband and with any other people that were like, you know, your priority needs to be your health. And I was going, well, my priority has to be me living the life that I want to live after this, when this is all over. And I had the belief and the faith that that was going to happen for me. And so I think, you know, asking those questions and pushing back and doing your research, you know, like, I got my ovaries shut down during during it, just in case, you know, I didn't know how things were going to work out.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, if you're not happy about something, I think there's no, like, it's better to ask a difficult question beforehand and really flag that it's a concern, because, you know, you don't know. And I know people who have had treatment and it hasn't negatively impacted their fertility, but I know a lot of people that it has. You know, and unfortunately it's becoming more and more common for, I suppose, younger women, but we're having families later as well.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big thing, you know. So,
and something you actually said earlier on at the beginning of the podcast was how important it was for you for your life after chemo. And I think, like, that's, it's so important, isn't it? Because some people will go into remission, other people will live with it for the rest of their lives, but, like, you have to have a life outside of your cancer. And I think it's really important to identify what's important for you so that you can, like you said, flag that at the beginning and make a plan, because there's no point in doing all the radiation, all the chemo, all the surgeries to not live the best life that you want to at the very end of it.
And like you said, they are difficult conversations, and it can be really intimidating and overwhelming when you're first in those rooms with consultants and radiologists and all of these different professionals who are telling you this is what's important, but actually, you know what's important for you as well at the end of the day. So I think the biggest message that I'm getting from you is always just speak your truth.
I think you need to speak up.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So that'd be your main point, wouldn't it? To just be firm in what you want out of your own life, regardless of what you're going through.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to. I definitely gave myself options, and, you know, thankfully it has worked out. It wasn't easy. You know, it was very, very difficult, and you know, you were trying to focus on, you know, getting better, doing treatment. And, you know, I didn't really, the fertility preservation gave me the option, we didn't look to surrogacy until my treatment was over. You know, But when I say over, I mean I'm still in the hormone therapy now, but in terms of the day-to-day of treatment, and I was actually starting the transition back to work at the same time. But, you know, again, I had the options, and surrogacy is still an option if you don't have to necessarily have had the full, you don't have to have an embryo. You could do donor eggs or donor sperm. And I know people who have done that, and then they feel like that's been their connection because they've picked the donor or whatever it is, you know. I just think for fertility in general, there's options out there, and it's about asking those questions.
Yeah. And talking about it, really, isn't it?
That's it.
And I suppose from listening to you, it sounds like the surrogacy convention was a massive help to you when you started, I suppose, looking into it. I think now with the pandemic and everything that's going on, I presume those conventions aren't happening.
They're doing them online.
Yeah. And what are the websites called that you
can
go to?
I think it's Growing Families. I can share that with you though.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. And we can actually just link them on our Instagram and on the website as well of the podcast, and to share them with people.
Yeah, there's a unfortunately, I suppose there's a fair amount of people in Ireland that have gone down this road, you know, for more than just because of cancer, but I think it's becoming more and more common.
Yeah, absolutely.
And thank you so much. Is there stuff that we're missing? Because obviously, like we said to you, this is totally out of our comfort zone. We know so little about it. Is there anything that we're missing? Questions we're not asking you? Anything?
No, I don't think so. I think, you know. Yeah, it's about the legals. The birth certs was a big thing.
Yeah.
Like the passport.
So it was an emotional roller coaster, it sounds like, but completely worth it.
Very much so. And I suppose now you almost forget, like, you know, he's 18 months now, and you know, he looks like
he's absolutely gorgeous.
You know, people have no idea that, you know, that I didn't carry him, and I forget that I didn't carry him.
He's your little boy.
He's just my little boy. Yeah, that's it. Absolutely. You know, and you know, it's, you know, you forget sometimes, you know, what you went through. You know, but it's
like that cliche saying, is like, you don't know how strong you are until you've no other choice but to be strong. When it's just amazing to think of what you can go through and come out the other side and still be yourself. So, yeah, listen, I just want to say thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think you're a phenomenal person, honestly.
Thank you very much.
You're so inspiring, honestly, and I just I'm just so grateful that you came on and shared your story with us. So
thank you.
Yeah, honestly, Leanne, this is going to help so many people, and you're just amazing.
I'm really
amazing.
Happy to help, you know, like,
yeah, thank you. Absolutely.
And you said, if I hope you don't mind us adding this in, if people did want to reach out to you to ask, it's okay for us to share your email address so people can contact us personally about that.
Yes.
Great, Leanne. Thanks a million. You're amazing.
Thanks for listening to the Answers for Cancers podcast. Please share this podcast with anybody who you think it might help. Also, if you can like and subscribe, it lets people know we're here. You can alternatively contact us on Instagram at theanswersforcancers_podcast. And if you have any questions on anything that we discussed today, please email us at theanswersforcancerspodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram.